Oh, and welcome to another Faith and Fitness Magazine podcast. Faith and Fitness Magazine is your tool for powerful, healthy, and passionate living. I'm really pleased today to be able to have James Dixon, Pastor James Dixon from Indiana, to speak with today. James is a father of three and is a pastor in, I believe, Anderson, Indiana, and is also an amputee advocate. So, James, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much. You have really been impactful with this Faith and Fitness magazine. The reason why I say that is to take it from the origin of the House Cafe to see, for some reason I'm recalling, did you begin the Faith and Fitness back then?
Yeah, it's been around now for 15 years, since 2003, actually.
You know, I tell you, I after speaking with Mark Lee yesterday, I recalled because he's
our photographer for your cover.
Yes, and he was and he said, "Have we met us?" "We have." I said, "You were the photographer for the Isles Cafe," and we talked about Faith and Fitness and. And, you know, God has truly used you. And now to bring us back full circle, you know, it's kind of like when you talk about being a pastor, I chose the name Providence because I truly believe in the divine order of God, that God orders our steps. And to some regard, I guess you would say I'm somewhat of a Calvinist with that. So.
Well, hey, you are a pastor in a city, so tell me about that.
Well, you know, I will tell you, one of the greatest challenges for me coming back to my hometown, the city that I first came to know the Lord and Savior when I was 15 years of age. The great boy in my heart growing up was being an amputee, being rejected by people because of it, whether it be my father and his non-acceptance of the fact that he could produce a child with disability. Having had nearly a surgery every 6 months from the time that I was just 90 days of age until culminating to the amputation at age 11, and then subsequent surgeries from there. Coming right up here, accepting the Lord as my Savior, seeking out, trying to learn about the Lord, like wanting to know more, researching, studying my Bible, contacting ministries and found a good Bible teaching church, go off to Bible college, come from Bible college, serve everywhere else, and then for the Lord to call me, come back home. And coming back home and starting the church in the inner city is a challenge for many reasons. You know, biblically it says, you know, Father Calvin and I have full honor his home country, but one of the challenges that I faced is in the black community was that by going to Bible college, traditionalists had said if God truly called you, you would just get up and preach. And the test in the black community was that you would stand in the pulpit. The moment you tell the pastor there, God's called me to preach, they give you the microphone, and the following Sunday, you stand up and you preach your trial sermon. And based off your inflection, your interaction, repeating the whatever cadences and cliches, they would tell you whether or not you have the gift or the call from God.
Right.
That is the most ineffective way to tell if someone's being called of God there has ever been. Because you just simply repeat whatever they said the week before and pay homage to them. And then afterwards people say, yep, he's got it, or no, he doesn't have it. So me going to Bible college and then showing up was in effect in the urban setting as if I was denying that, you went the light route was the challenge many years ago.
Yeah.
Just the perception that people had that if God called you to preach, he wouldn't call you to prepare. But I believe just the opposite. The preparation wasn't just the head knowledge acquisition, you know, it is also the life trials and experiences you go through that mature you so that what you know in your head you now can apply through your life. And that's what led me to plant a ministry rather than take over a traditional church.
No, that's good. And a lot of people don't want to put in that time and effort to do the preparation, but it's critical. Tell me a little bit about your actual church.
All right. You know, I began like in this day and age, starting a church, you know, there you learn marketing. You learn how to use marketing for evangelism. So rather than just put down a sign saying we're starting September such and such and go door to door traditionally, a lot of places, you know, you go to in a depressed economic area, you know, it isn't just about going door to door trying to, you know, that becomes a challenge. You can end up trying that way. That's a very difficult road. I decided to start using fitness as an avenue, interaction where I can meet families, men, and build ministry focused. I targeted men. Going after men allows me to get the whole family. And that's the cornerstone in the setting I'm in. The smallest percentage of anyone that attends church is in the Black community, and it's within that subcategory of the whole Black community is men. So I started off using fitness as a evangelistic tool, using an advertisement that I'm given through a giveaway, whether it be, you know, we do the garage sales, rummage sales, giveaway clothes, kids going back to school, baby clothes, whatever, using different avenues, social services type things, to be able to draw people to the ministry and build it. So that's how I began this ministry, using those ways of evangelism. And, you know, man, I'm a Bible teaching, preaching pastor, man, that doesn't do, I don't do any hooping. If you're not familiar, Brian, are you familiar with the term hooping?
I'm not.
Okay. In the Black community, traditional pastors, you do something would sound like this. You will identify it with this. He goes, you know, and God, he showed me, he did this, he makes a way. That's called hooping.
Okay, I am familiar with that.
Yeah, it's a rhythmical cadence to draw you in emotionally, and you get a response out of people. And if you don't do that, then they think there's something missing out of it. So if you go, okay, you know, we're going to break down the, you know, look at the name Issachar, or you break down Joseph's life, and you start doing the chronological order of his life and his family, the names, what it means, the origin, the background. They're like, oh, this is boring. What is that? But the thing about the Word of God is that when you're teaching it, especially in an urban setting, if you can equip people when you have everything working against them with biblical knowledge, right? So all of a sudden now they're not swayed by feminism, which should have never entered into the Black community, you know? But since the majority of people that attend our services in the Black community is women, and feminism brought in this whole thing that somehow I should do everything a man should do. And women took over the pulpits in the Black community. And the more the women took over leadership, the more men abdicated that responsibility and stopped going. Where women took on more leadership, took on more roles, men just left. And so when it came in to start a urban inner city ministry, you had to focus on men because they weren't there. And I have to empower, encourage, educate, and build them back up. And then the full family comes back. As much as feminism sounded like an appealing thing, it should have never entered the Black community. Black men have never been in overpowering of women, especially black community. There's no appeal for it. I don't believe it's biblical at all. Feminism is just another world way of bringing an energy between man and woman that goes beyond what we talked about with actually do.
Well, you bring up a good point, you know, and going back to the, I think you refer, you call it hooping. There's, you know, that's one thing, but the honest to goodness truth is in anybody's culture, from wherever their walk in life is, there are things that they learn are the common way we do it, the norm, the effective tool or
here's
means.
Here's the proven way to do it, the seeker search.
More
of what you guys.
And I think, you know, you really bring up a good point, is that the challenge for us in today's culture is to get back to God and start to say, hey, God, what's the way you want to do it? You know, what's the proper and the way that you're going to find effective? So, well, that's cool. I want to get on here and get more. Go ahead and share your story briefly about becoming an amputee and just what your story is like on that. And then I want to get into really starting to get into some spiritual perspectives on that.
Absolutely. Well, I'll do it this way. Losing my leg at 11 was traumatic. There were so many mistakes made at a particular hospital here in Indiana, Riley, that we had to go to Shriners Children's Hospital, which took care of, you know, all the expenses, all those things for me. And then returning back to Indiana after the amputation, there was just a huge void for me as far as acceptance. All my dreams, you know, of wanting to play sports with everybody kid, you know, there were a lot of limitations that I faced because of the prosthetics technology at the time. That all of those rejection points from father, from, you know, trying to date as I got older, all those things, was like, man, that's just a huge void. Like, God, who's going to love me? What about, you know, where do I fit in? And coming to the saving knowledge of Christ filled every one of my voids. It gave me purpose. It gave me knowledge. It introduced me to something that I had never heard preached in any service I've been in, a biblical character by the name of Mephibosheth.
Say that again.
The crippled son of Jonathan, his name was Mephibosheth. He's the one that was hiding in Lodabar when King David finally took the throne. And he asked, is there anyone living in the household of Saul? And they said, there is Mephibosheth, you know. And he was crippled, not as a result of his own, but because of when they were on the run, the woman caring for him fell and caused his disability with his leg. And when they pulled him out of Lodabar, the place of height, you know, literally determines that. When he found him, he says to David, but I am but a dead dog. That passage kind of summed up my whole feeling in life, that I have no use, I have no acceptance. No matter what potential that I had, it's gone because of what I've lost. And David, you know, so gracefully, you know, embodies the role of Christ there, the way that he took Mephibosheth and he put him at the same table. He said, you eat at my table continually. And used him and gave him leadership and gave him the land that Saul had so fought to try to hold on to. Now his grandson has it, even though he's lame of both his feet. But being lame never went away. But giving it as an excuse did go away.
Right.
Because God can take every weakness and turn it into an opportunity for you to be used of him. And it becomes the strength that he uses. He exalts you so that he can glorify himself by using you as proof that God is real.
Now, that's good, man. Hey, at such an early age, I assume you experienced firsthand people's attitudes and human reactions. Perhaps it was a mom telling her son not to stare at you, or someone awkwardly offering to help, or perhaps ignoring you when they could help because they just felt uncomfortable. Francis Schaeffer authored the book and film series, How Should We Then Live? The premise is that when we base society on God and the Bible, we're equipped with solid ways to conduct our lives. My question to you is, what could life look like today if the Bible starts to play a greater role in daily thought and behavior?
Wow. That's great. So I'll answer the first aspect of that. Yeah, I did struggle with everywhere I would go, what's wrong with him? Or they lowered expectations as if it were a mental disorder, or you have an issue with your leg. That isolation that comes with it, you know, the fragility that they think that you have. So there were a lot of things that were left out on, you know. But the isolation turned into an opportunity for me to spend more time with older people. My grandmother had boarders, older people that lived with her because they didn't have family and stuff, so they lived in our home. And I was able to, they struggled reading, so they asked me to read. And so one of the things they would always ask me to read is the Bible to them. So it helped me develop some biblical habits, some spiritual habits I continue today. So that's why devotion is so easy. I've done it every day of my life. Since, you know, like the creed I was reading. So, but then you said, how should we then live? If you're talking about if the Bible takes more prevalent, it becomes more prevalent in the lives of so-called believers, I think we'll see more people turn away from abortion. I think we'll end that horrible practice that is, especially big in my community. 45% of all abortions come from 7% of America's population, black people, black women specifically. I believe that the more that the Bible is preached and taught in an applicable way, and there's accountability, there's a revival, I believe, that will take place. And that would, I mean, the murdering of our children for convenience, for any reason. Brother Brad, do you realize that I would have been aborted in this culture? They knew that I was coming with a disability, and they would have aborted me. But God had a different plan. He aborted the plan to abort me. And as a result of it, man, I've got to preach the whole word, the whole counsel. And I think that a revival is going to take place. And I believe that every one of us has a responsibility that know the truth, to preach it unapologetically and to live it, man. We have to.
Absolutely.
We can't be just verbal, and we can't be idealistic, and we can't isolate ourselves from people.
For sure.
But the more that we are public with our faith, the more we give an example, the more we give whether we will face accusations. You know, people are like, you're a homophobe. If you preach on certain subjects and post it on social media, you can be banned for hate speech. But we've got to be willing to be wise, but to be bold with it. And to do it in such a loving way that we have to expect there's going to be opposition.
Let me follow up on that boldness with this next question. One piece of instruction often given from a parent to a child, or one spouse to another, or quite honestly to just about anyone who needs to behave well in the moment, is just be nice. And while it's well-intentioned advice, the underlying belief is that righteousness is unattainable, so tolerance is the minimum expectation. Just be nice is a bad substitute for be like Christ. Talk about this culture of compromise and how it affects or infects the gym, our churches, families, and so much of life today.
I'll give you a great example of that. When Nehemiah, of course, there's the rebuilding wall. You have all of these things that we go to build up these barriers that God has given us in order to be obedient. You have, You have Tobias and Sanballat still coming in our ideas of being nice. We let the enemy in. And rather than we change the culture, we allow it to change us. We have become very, very weak with the idea of just being nice. So we will say, in order to seek those and win those who claim to be LGBTQ community, it's like, well, we will then not preach sound word. We won't talk about repentance. We talk about love. And then we make love a replacement for God. Just love. As long as you love. And it sounds so, it becomes a watered-down motivational thing rather than actual biblical principle that someone can change. We can't say that we're going to simply try to be nice and you'll win people over by just being nice. You will win them over by just being righteous. And by righteous, I don't mean perfect. I mean righteous by submitting ourselves to God, being open about our failures or shortcomings, but using word. It is not just at our gym, okay? There is a the gym I had joined, prominent gym, tells us, guys, there's going to be some changes for gender fluidity. And I said, what do you mean by that? You know, that, so as a manager comes around, he said, well, we have hired some staff that identifies themselves. They're women, were women, but now they're fluid. Or one has identified themselves as a man now, and she'll be coming and working in the men's locker room. And the people who were upset about that, the men were. And it's like, I don't feel comfortable with her in here. And they're like, please don't refer to her as her. She wants to be called they or them. And they're like, if you say she, they will ban you from the gym for being disrespectful to the young lady who now identifies herself as a man. That's gone so far out there that as a believer, you know, I can't just accept that there are 82 different genders. I believe what God said, that one, that I didn't evolve from a monkey. Two, that that God made male and female, and that there is a reason why we can reproduce. Man and the ability to reproduce is God's human currency on the earth, no different than when every leader that we have here in America, you know, that we've chosen to put on currency, it covers the whole place where the U.S. has impact. The dollar has a certain face and has a value. The 100 has a face and has a value. And that currency has weight. God took a priceless currency called humanity, and he died for that through his son Christ, not through Christ, you know, and to provide a value that could redeem that currency. And he made it in two forms, male and female. And he said for us to reproduce, to replenish, to grow. This idea that, like, hey, we need to not have children, when you hear that in this new Green Deal and all these things that come across from our politicians, abortion should be a health issue. Brother, we got to stop being nice and go back to being biblical. Biblical, yeah. We can change the world. The idea of being nice, it's only going one way. They don't have to be tolerant of your beliefs. You can kill a Christian today, and it's okay. But if you bash anything Muslim, then, you know, you better believe you're going to pay for it. You'll never hear them mock, or you'll see they'll make movies with Christ in the most offensive, disrespectful way. But you'll never see them do that with a Muslim.
So let me go ahead and...
has weakened us.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go in a little further here. Another conversation on being nice, and that is that faith is optional. It's something we can add to life to flavor it. It's the icing added to the cake, but it's not the cake or the real meat, the main goal or purpose. And that's a thought that, quite honestly, is very strong in a lot of Christians' mind. They're well, I'm going to go to the gym, but I'm really not going to live out my faith, because that's something that everybody has to sort of make their choice about. So it's an optional thing. And I'd like for you to just sort of talk about that, you know, that whole mentality that faith is just sort of the extra icing added.
Well, you know, it's funny you keep mentioning that. The thing about this, the, you know, physical fitness is something, you know, we should be doing as believers, simply because we should take care of the temple. It's on loan. It's not yours. But the reason why God has us continue to take care of this thing and be a good steward is so that we can be a good soldier. A soldier goes to war. Everywhere we go is the battlefield, and it's an important battlefield because it's one for someone's destiny. We are talking about, if this was a preference thing where you like to lift weights, I like to do cardio, I like to do stretching, you like, you know, if it were something based like that, you know, hey, everyone do whatever you think is best for your body, right? But when it comes down to faith, when we are silent, the consequence is that someone goes to hell. And then Jeremiah has taught us, you know, with not say unto the wicked, O wicked man, as you shall die. If you don't warn the wicked man of his way, the man will die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. We have to stop taking our faith as if it were, you know, an option. It should be the number one focus of why we do what we do. It should be the most known thing about us. If I'm working out with you, I'm going to encourage you with word. I'm going to mention Christ. I'm going to mention God. But I'm not going to just do it in a base way of like, God bless you, and think that that somehow is going to be enough. But, you know, I use every interaction that I'm working with, out with someone. It's like, man, God has more in store. It's more. He has a purpose for your life. It's a plan for your life. And, you know, it's like, man, we got to build you up so that you can be used by God, so you can make a legacy. You know, I appeal to the things that are in their heart, but I use word. It's critical, man. I'm not going to waste my time interacting with you, and I can't speak about God. And I'm not talking about the browbeating thing or the sound super spiritual thing, like as if I live in heaven and not on earth. But I'm talking about the practical biblical principles that interact in everything that we do.
Yeah.
It's on purpose. You know, it's evangelized. And if you're not going to make disciples, you know, man, I don't know. I think we got to go back to wondering whether or not people have truly become, is Christianity a thing, or is Christianity someone? Because if you're connected to someone, you'll be passionate about it. If it's a thing, then you'll wait, you know, then you won't say anything because everybody has a right to their home.
Yeah.
Someone, you'll speak up.
And then I want to take that just one step further. Let's hit the gym for a minute. Imagine, if you will, with me, that we're seeing two trainers with two clients. One trainer, her name is Nancy Nice, and the other guy, the other trainer is Demanding Deshaun. Let's talk about that in terms of faith. Why, you know, Nancy Nice, when she works with her client, she'll just sort of give them those light weights, and you know, the ultimate conversation is, ah, nice, you're doing a good job. You know, just real affirming and making them feel good with what she's doing with them. Demanding Deshaun, on the other hand, he's, come on, let's push it a few more. Let's hit this a little harder. Let me show you something here so that we can take this up a notch and really take you to a place that you've never been before. So talk about that in terms of faith. Why is it important to push ourselves and each other to mature in faith? And how are some ways we can do that? And then finally, is it worth the cost?
Wow, that's a great way. I'm going to break this down in a way. You may have added this here, but you know, it's like walking into Planet Fitness, and they say it's a no judgment zone. And so anything that anybody does, if you see someone using a piece of equipment wrong, you say something, that's judgment. You walk in and you too fit, they'll say that, you know, it's not for you. Your body's shaming by just being in shape. You know, so this whole thing about being nice means, you know, it's you would be affirming people no matter how wrong or how weak they are. And it's just, you know, it's all about making sure you don't make anyone feel that there's more to them or more to be expected. Just, hey, what, just the fact that you're here is enough. Just the fact that you're around, the fact you you're so awesome. You know, and it's all about self-esteem. The self-esteem has become a horrible thing because we esteem ourselves more than we ought. So when it comes to demanding, and you look at the culture, young men and will gravitate to expectation or people who demand more out of them. A parent that seeks to be overly friendly with his child will lose his child's respect. The parent that sets boundaries and guidelines, the child will seek to make that parent proud. When it comes to demanding Deshaun, the one thing that people want is that demanding Deshaun can actually pick and choose his clientele. He can be picky. I'm not going to invest in people that don't have a runway. If you don't have a desire to be more, want more, to accept the fact that I'm going to hold you to accountability, then this isn't for you. The more that you have a standard, the more those people will come to you because they want it, because they want to see a change. If I were enough then for the Nancy Nannies, if I were just enough as is, then why do I need to come? Why do I need to worship? Why do I need to accept Christ if I'm enough just as I am? If you affirm me just the way I was, then if my was enough, then I don't need to develop, to change, all to repent. Or demanding the shot, as you mentioned, would be the individual that's in like that. You know, you need to die daily. Whatever you were yesterday isn't enough. You've got to die daily. You've got to improve. You've got to grow.
And let me ask you, is it worth the cost?
Yeah, 100%. Because the results come with the demand. You know, I'm telling you, if you find yourself isolated, it is because you will find yourself becoming a leader. And people will follow that leadership. But you got to get out there. You got to be willing to be counterculture. I just saw a study where seeker services are now young people saying, I would rather go to an old traditional service than to go to the seeker services with the rock band and the cool young pastor that looks like he's off the set of on an MTV show. It's not about trying to emulate the world. Be different. You know, be you, be different because you are just a pilgrim passing through. You're going to be peculiar. Be that. Own it. Accept it.
James, you're going to be speaking at the 2019 Faith and Fitness Magazine Redefined Conference. You're the keynote, actually. So any thoughts about that? What people have to hear when they connect with you face-to-face?
Brother, let me say this. First of all, Brad, it's an honor. But I want to take it to a whole another level. If you're listening, right, and you're thinking about whether you should go or not, you absolutely should. I promise to put every ounce of everything that God has developed and been working on out of my life and bring that thing out there to encourage, to inspire, challenge. The one thing that you want and to walk away with is the ability to ride a bike after a conference. You know, you bring people in like they're going to learn to ride a bike. You're going to learn a new skill, add something to your repertoire. And it's like, now, how do I make that translate back to where I'm my real world, my training life, my fitness life, my ministry life, my personal life? When we are gathered together, man, and from the panels of discussions to being there in ministry, I mean, I promise I will be prepared to pour everything out and make it so that it's applicable in every way outside of there. The most I can tell you is that, man, everything that I am, everything that God has brought me through, I'm going to give it all to better my brothers, to be prepared to impact lives.
We're looking forward to that. Well, we've been speaking today with James Dixon, pastor in Indiana, and also an amputee advocate. And James, it's been a real pleasure just to get some words from you, and I know there's a lot more live coming up when you're the keynote at the Redefine Conference. Thank you, man, for being with us today.
Brother, thank you, man. Brad, let me tell you a secret now. I have been up 21 hours, you know, and I still have things to do. But I stayed up. I wanted to make sure I was alert and give you my undivided, and I'm honored for this. There's much work for us to do, but I thank you for the work that you are doing. I thank you for the impact and for the privilege it is, brother, to be connected to you for such a time as this. But thank you so much for this.
Well, thank you. Well, listen, this has been Faith and Fitness Magazine's podcast. Tell other people that this is a place where you can get some good audio, some good words, some good reading, and join us for the next podcast coming up soon. For Faith and Fitness Magazine, this is Brad Bloom.